This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.
Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. Mark Reardon.
The heart of America is not government. The center of America is not Washington, D.C. The center of America is the neighborhoods where 330 million Americans are raising their kids and trying to put food on the table and trying to love their neighbors.
Mark Reardon.
There's nothing worse than a reckless jackass who thinks he's smarter than everybody else.
I am the smartest man alive!
The Mark Reardon Show is on now.
Oh, it is on, ladies and gentlemen, as we get rolling here for a Monday. And Ethan Hannaford, who is producing in the interim as Abby left us a couple of weeks ago, he put something on my radar. By the way, like if you want this job full time, don't put something on my radar in the last 30 seconds of Annie's show and say, hey, you should hear this. You got to step up to the plate and give me that sooner. You understand that,
listen,
right?
Listen, I'm sorry, okay? I'm sorry.
But Sue, let me just start, just because this is maybe the most fun piece of audio of the day. And I don't even think you really have to be a college football fan, but I don't know if you know this, but Notre Dame lost to Northern Illinois.
Oh, number five, Notre Dame, fifth
number
ranked in the
five
country,
in the nation.
Well, you didn't even have to say that. It's Notre Dame,
exactly. But here's what I remember, Ethan. You know this too. Is last weekend after they won their game, I remember seeing ESPN. Notre Dame, look at their schedule. They're going to be undefeated. Look at them going to the championship. This could be a historic year. And then this happened, of course, the other day, which was just epic when you think about it.
He's lining it up. 5 seconds left. NIU up 16-14. 62-yarder. Snap, hold, Jeter's kick. It's blocked! It's blocked! It's blocked! Picked up by NIU! Picked up by NIU! The Huskies have done it! The Huskies with the biggest upset in NIU history!
Oh, I love it.
Oh, my God.
62-yarder was going to be tough, although these guys in the NFL are seemingly kicking like 75-yarders. But that guy, Fred, we got to see if we can get a hold of that guy. He might not have any voice left.
Yeah, no kidding.
That's Andy Garcia. So I'll try to get him.
I thought that was fantastic. And look, it was a really, really good college football and NFL weekend. I went to Mizzou for the game on Saturday night. It was fantastic. I mean, the weather, not only in Columbia, but across the state, was just beautiful this weekend. Really, really amazing. I hope everyone get out and enjoyed it. You know, I took my daughter. I got to say this because my weekend was jam-packed. One of the first things that Sue said to me, Fred, was, wow, that weekend went by fast. And I'm in the camp that would say, yes, I agree with you.
I do too.
I left the show on Friday, and I wasn't going to go home, but I zipped home because I had some stuff to take care of. I came back downtown. I knew that ELO wasn't going on until 9 o'clock. I met former Senator Lamping and his wife at the show, and it was fantastic. I was so glad that I put that on my bucket list,
good,
Sue.
Good.
And I made an exception for artists over 70 years old because
that's the dumbest rule. Can I just say?
Well, here's why.
What is the rule?
Like, he won't see.
I'm already breaking it, so it's not much of a rule.
I
said I'm going to basically not see any artists over 70 years old anymore because I've seen most of them and I've seen them enough, and I just think that there's a time to make that call. And then I, you know, hadn't seen ELO, so I wanted to see Jeff Lynne. But here's one of the reasons. Can I explain the rule?
Uh huh.
It's not as much because of the artist, right? It's because of the audience. Because I go to the show the other night, and there's a plus and a minus, and I'm going to highlight this here in a second. Oh, my God, I felt like I was the youngest person in there. And I don't think I was the youngest person in there, but damn, you people are old going to ELO, right? Now, I'm old too, but you look older than me, and that's the thing that really jumps out at me. And that's my issue, Sue, if that makes sense.
I'm sorry, so you don't like being surrounded by people who are your age but look older than you?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I think
Fred, can you help me out?
I think that's basically it.
This just sounds like Soylent Green or something like that to me.
Oh, but I have to brag on my daughter, too, because one of the goals of the weekend, and she's been the one that's been very proactive on this. She said at the end of last year she might want to shoot a deer this year. She has shot some 22s and some BB guns and stuff like that, target shooting. But she kept saying, look, I want to shoot a deer. Well, we have to get her ready for that. And we went up to Columbia. My hunting mentor, Kevin Yeager, took great care with her. I dropped her off, actually, at Kevin's house, and Becky and I left for a couple hours. And I put some of this on Instagram stories, and it was really impressive. She did a great job. She was shooting a 223 and handled it exceptionally well. And we might get out to shoot a deer this fall. So we'll see what happens. But I was very proud of her because she did a great, great job. Jane and I, the other thing that happened is, and this just aired across the planet. The BBC was in town. We did a great interview on Thursday with Paul Coletti, who is the producer for this news hour that they put together that airs on, I think he said, 490 affiliates, you know, around the globe. The one affiliate that doesn't pick them up is where they were doing the broadcast today. The St. Louis subsidized radio station doesn't pick up their syndicated show. So they came in sort of a dual purpose to lobby the station to air their show, but also do a little investigation about Midwest politics and the abortion issue, et cetera. So Jane and I went down, made the sacrifice for the second round of the NFL games yesterday. That was not easy for me to do, but for my friends across the pond that we booted out of this country 250 years ago, yes, I was happy to do it. I really was. And we just sat down with their host for 10 minutes, 11 minutes, I think, the interview, and just talked a little bit about the Midwest and what makes us different and where we thought, you know, some of this is taking us with the presidential campaign. We talked about the debate tomorrow night, and it was a fun chat. So I thank them because we had a really good time. It was beautiful weather. We just sat. We went to Mama's on the Hill. You know, one of the challenges is on the Hill, most of those restaurants are not open on Sundays.
Yeah. Right? And the weather was so great. I imagine everything outside was packed.
Well, we those guys wanted to eat from the BBC, and Jane and I were just going down, and we had other things to do, but we just took a look across the street, and there was this VFW hall. It wasn't open, but they had some picnic tables, and we respectfully used the picnic tables, and we did the interview there, and it was fantastic. So really good weekend. I enjoyed, Ethan, I'm sure you enjoyed the football weekend. Lots of great games. Look, Mizzou, here's what I'd say. I thought that they did exactly what they needed to do against Buffalo. What worries me is they're now ranked sixth in the nation, according to the AP poll. They're number seven in the coaches poll. In the AP poll, Ethan, I think it was Boston College has slipped into the rankings,
24th
right?
now.
Yeah, they're
yes.
24th. I don't think they made it into the coaches poll, but now you have a situation with, what is it, 11:30 or noon kickoff or something like that, mm-hmm. midday kickoff in Columbia this Saturday, where that's a huge game, a big, big game early in the season for Mizzou. Probably more on the line than people thought.
They have jumped up in on the strength of schedule list, which will be good for them, you know, even if they are to lose a game on the schedule, you know, having that going down the road near as we near the college football playoff will be helpful for them. So if they are to get a win from Boston College now because they're ranked, it looks way better than it would have before.
Right.
So
yeah,
that's very good for them.
It's a good resume builder, if you will. And then I'll save a little of this for the 4 o'clock hour. And this is where this goes back to me being old and not really wanting to confront my age. This whole Kendrick Lamar is the Super Bowl halftime show thing. I don't understand it. No one's going to ever be able to explain it to me. I just don't get it. I'm a white supremacist, so I don't get it. Is that what
Ethan,
I can say?
Ethan, does it make sense to the Ute?
He says it does, right?
We talked a little bit about this earlier, how the performer of the halftime show, it seems like more recently is keeps getting younger and younger and younger, and it seems like they're trying to really hit my generation, and you guys are just kind of getting left out.
I guess so. And you know who's else getting left out? White people. White people are not really popular with the folks
apparently
that put on the Super Bowl, because listen to what's happened since George Floyd. I'll give you a little history. Now, I said I was going to do this at 4. I'm lying. I'm going to do it right now since we started the Kendrick Lamar. One of the things I was going to do, Fred and Sue, and Ethan is our outlier here because he's younger. If I went around to this radio station, well, let's say it was a different era and people actually worked here in the building. And I went around and we had salespeople here because there's usually nobody here. And I said, can you name one Kendrick Lamar song? Like just one. You think most people could do it?
No.
I don't either. Now, Ethan, you say a lot of younger people could. Your mic's not on, and you don't know that because you don't have good headphones, because you got that stupid wire sticking out of your ear, and you're not wearing real headphones.
Under the age of 30 in this entire facility, yes,
they would know it.
They would know this song at least.
Humble, which is like, that's the number one song that he's had.
This is one of his most popular ones, yes.
But so I listen to a lot of, here's the deal, I listen to a lot of pop radio. I listen, like on Sirius XM, I listen to Hits 1. And I'm sure they've played Kendrick Lamar on Hits 1, but I couldn't name you one of his songs. And if you go back in Super Bowl history, so let's just go back to 2014. All right, since we're in 2024.
All right. Yeah,
Bruno Mars and the Red Hot Chili Peppers. I like that one. That was pretty good. I like Bruno Mars. Then Katy Perry and Lenny Kravitz and Missy Elliott. So you always have offsets here with the race. Just keep that in mind. Coldplay, bunch of white dudes. You can't have that. Beyonce and Bruno Mars were there also in 2016. Now, somehow, the white supremacist Lady Gaga got there all on her own in 2017. I'm not exactly sure how that happened. And then JT did it as well, Justin Timberlake, in 2018. But then Maroon 5 was with Travis Scott and Big Boy. And then there's no more white people allowed at the Super Bowl, probably from now until the end of time. Shakira, J-Lo, Bad Bunny, J Balvin, Emmy Muniz. I have no idea who the last two are on that. Then it was The Weeknd. I'm proud of the fact that right around that time in 2021, I thought The Weeknd was a band and not a person. Then I learned that it was a person. I think I might have learned that a little bit before. 2022, Eminem, Dr. Dre, Snoop, Kendrick Lamar, and Mary J. Blige. 2023, Rihanna. 2024, Usher with Alicia Keys, Jermaine Dupri, Her, and Ludacris and Lil Jon and stuff like that. So the Super Bowl is trending urban, I guess. And outside of the race of the performers, let me just address this. You can't have rock and roll or a white pop singer or maybe even a country act who might be filling stadiums across. Like, what about Stapleton or someone like that, yeah, right? Do a Chris Stapleton
people would like that
mash up with a couple of other rockers. I don't know.
He performed the anthem, I think, last year, 2 years ago. It was one of the best national anthems at the Super Bowl I've ever seen.
Yeah, he was great.
But look, my point, I'm not trying to... white people have had enough attention. I get it and all that before I get labeled a racist, but come on. I mean, the pattern is... And here's the other thing. Go back and track who sang the national anthem. I believe you'll find Chris was an outlier on that as well, because there's not a lot of white people that are doing that these days either, not at major sports events. Maybe in Major League Baseball, you get a country artist in there that's drunk, like at the All-Star game, but outside of that, not a whole lot. We got Selena Zito coming up here in just a couple of minutes. Let me, before we get to her, let me highlight one of my favorite stories of the day. I love this one. I sent this, you know, I like to tease my friend, State Representative Steve Butts. He's become a friend, and we kind of go back and forth with one another. He likes to send me some economic news. Like, when the economic news is good, he's like, see, Bidenomics is working. We go back and forth, and we tease each other, but this was really one of my favorite. And this may be my favorite story of the year at this point. There's been several qualification stories, if you will, along these lines, and now they have to kind of put this out because they know how embarrassing it is. So, if you go back to the beginning of June, ladies and gentlemen, it was going to be the worst hurricane season ever on the planet, wiping out, I mean, Florida wasn't even going to be here by this time.
That's right.
I don't think.
That's
right. Or the Carolinas. They were going to go deep into the ocean, and essentially, I think you'd have, like, Oklahoma would be oceanfront property at this point. But lo and behold, ladies and gentlemen, not only were they wrong, this is so fun for me. It really is, because not only were they wrong, we now have new history in the Atlantic Ocean in particular. The Atlantic Ocean has just made history for the longest stretch without a single late summer cyclone. So think about where we went. We went from it was going to the worst ever. In fact, the headline today in the Washington Post is, hey, what happened to predictions of a, quote, historic hurricane season? Because, and I can even do this right now. I can do this in my reading list. Let me see. If I just put hurricane in the reading list on my, and bear with me here.
All right, Barry.
Because, oh, here it is. NOAA predicts above normal 24 Atlantic hurricane season. Forecasters warn 24 hurricane season. Wait, this is Forbes. Let's see what it says here. Explosive 24 Atlantic hurricane season may set record, forecasters warn. Here's why. I mean, you had stories in the LA Times, the Washington Post, the New York Times. Now all of a sudden you got these stories. Hey, what happened? But here's my favorite part. So I sent that to Steve. You know, and my mantra with Steve Butts is, and this is a good example for you, ladies and gentlemen, never, ever, 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 ever believe the experts, because they're wrong. And they're not only wrong sometimes, they're wrong all the freaking time. And we sit there and we buy it. And we buy it because the mainstream media shoves it down our throat. You have publications out there like the Washington Post and the LA Times and our idiotic paper here in St. Louis. They won't even expect, or they won't even accept, rather, any kind of alternative narrative on climate change, which is embarrassing. So then they have to come back and say, so when I sent this to Butts today, I said, reason number 1,234,567 to never trust the experts. And he says, the experts are usually correct. And Chris Higgins on Fox 2 explained this exact thing well on last night's broadcast. Well, explained what? How wrong they are on a regular basis? And the experts are not right all the time. I'm sorry, my friend Steve Butts. They're wrong all the time. They were wrong on COVID. They were wrong on vaccines. They were wrong on this. They're wrong constantly on climate change. All the time they're wrong. And we keep accepting it like it's real because the legacy media shoves it down our throats. So this is another fun one, ladies and gentlemen, for you and your lefty wacko friends that think that some of this stuff is real. When you're sitting around the barbecue or you're going to a game and they bring up climate change, remind them that it's all a bunch of crap and to shut up. I wonder if they'll talk about this at the debate tomorrow night. That would be fun as well. We're coming back. We got Selena Zito.
Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.
Up next, Sue's News in the next hour here on 97.1 FM Talk. Also in the 4 o'clock hour, Ian Scherer, Sue will be here. We love Ian from used to be with CNET. He's the CBS tech guy right now. Got a big Apple event right now and some other things as well. This Google antitrust lawsuit, so we'll get with Ian in the next hour. Cusimano's here. He'll talk about the Mizzou victory and the Cardinals weekend, etc. The other story of the weekend, which is interesting, is Tyreek Hill, wide receiver for the Miami Dolphins, was arrested. Well, he wasn't arrested. He was ticketed and then handcuffed on the ground. The whole thing is weird. I'd like to look, I back the police when it is appropriate to back the police. In this particular situation, I don't know if I can back the cops, but there's still a lot of questions, so we don't know everything. We have state rep, I just demoted her, state senator Mary Elizabeth Coleman, former state rep, is going to weigh in on the abortion issue. That is still a question right now. They're going to meet tomorrow in court, and we're going to see if that is going to actually go on the ballot because Cole County judge, one of the Limbaugh judges, because there's so many of them actually, last week ruled that that is not going to be on the ballot. It's going to go to the Supreme Court. They're going to have a hearing tomorrow. So we'll have the very latest on that. Right now, though, Selena Zito is with us, columnist for the New York Post, the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, the Washington Examiner, writes at selenazito.com. How are you, Selena?
Oh, you know, just living the dream. How about you?
We're doing okay here. You know, it was a pretty good. I know you've backed off a little bit on NFL, but your Steelers won yesterday, right?
That's what I heard.
Well, they did. They did, and they still have some challenges ahead, but I had a great weekend. I was very excited about football, got our Mizzou Tigers ranked high, and it was a fun day in the NFL. But now we are upon a different game tomorrow night with this second presidential debate. Well, wait, it's kind of the first presidential debate, isn't it?
Well, it is, right? I mean, there was a first presidential debate between Biden and Trump, and that was one for the history books. It certainly ended up being the catalyst that sort of took Joe Biden out. And, you know, a lot has happened since that debate. And I often wonder if that debate hadn't happened, if he would have dropped out. I tend to think yes anyways, but now we're on to the second one. It's between Harris and Trump. It's in my home state of Philadelphia, and Harris has been in Pittsburgh for the past 4.5 days.
So let me go back to maybe some of the stuff, you know, specifically related to the debate in a minute. But I want to go back, and I talked about this column on my roundtable on Friday when you wrote about J.D. Vance. This was when, you know, he did the go to hell line over the Abbey Gate situation. And I thought that what you wrote about that particular speech with Vance, you know, with working class people following along and listening to what he had to say, it was interesting. I had an opportunity. There were some people from the BBC in town, Selena. They did a broadcast actually this afternoon, and they blasted it back overseas, and they have a bunch of outlets too. And they interviewed me and my colleague Jane Duker yesterday about what we felt the Midwest was really about and how the Midwest is different from the other parts of the country and whether we're a flyover state, etc. And I thought about your column just in relating to, because they were asking questions about J.D. Vance and Tim Walz and how much they're relatable to people in the Midwest. And your column made a really good point of how that sort of flushes out, I think.
Yeah, you know, like the headlines from that event, and by the way, Walls was here in Pittsburgh too. If you want me to chat about that,
oh, yes.
I'd be happy to.
We will,
to.
Yes.
But, you know, Vance came to Erie. Erie is undeniably not only the most important county in Pennsylvania, but also in the country. As Erie goes, so goes the nation. And it is the center of working class America. Those voters there, no matter what their race is, are mostly working class with some, you know, suburban upper middle class voters. And Vance was greeted with a hero's welcome there. He talked about the dignity of work. He talked about working with your hands. He talked about the values that were important to those voters and how they had felt left behind. And you know, while everyone focused on him saying Harris can go to hell, totally understand why
Right. They
would focus on that. However, they missed the reception and, more importantly, the speech that Vance gave and, you know, how he resonated with those voters. Nobody talked about, you know, the crowd that he, you know, they expected like maybe 40 to 100 people. There were several hundred people there. Nobody talked about the retail stop he made at a local butcher shop. Nobody talked about his speech. And nobody talked about how people just came out of their homes and their businesses and were lining the street to wave to him as he drove through town to go from the factory sort of neighborhood of Erie to the airport.
So a lot of relatability. And I guess that would kind of fold into the next question. You said Harrison Walls are there. So is the radical nature of Tim Walz's positions versus J.D. Walz, I guess, or even Republican versus Democrat, is that being discussed in Pennsylvania right now, or is that being glossed over?
Well, among voters, it is. You know, Walz has some pretty staunch stance on guns. He's taken some pretty hard positions that have impacted small businessmen and women in his state. And there's questions that I don't think have been answered with dignity and directly about how he sort of discussed his military service. You know, Pennsylvania is one of the, you know, biggest states in terms of people who step up and volunteer along with West Virginia, right? And those, how you discuss service is as important as the service that you participated in. And, you know, that is sort of saying that as a high school teacher that you have poor grammar, you're like, well, wait a minute, were you a poor teacher? Or do you not know how to discuss, you know, simple things like weapons of war is not poor grammar? And so there is a real challenge there. And I thought it was interesting when Walls and Harris came to Pittsburgh before the campaign, before the convention, they bussed people in to go to their events. When she was here in Labor Day with Joe Biden, it was invite only, bus people to the event. So you don't have a real tangible idea of the enthusiasm. And when he came to Western Pennsylvania last week, he went to a farm, and the woman that owned the farm sort of scolded him about fracking.
Really?
So, yeah. You all can check it out at SelenaZito.com. But, you know, I mean, these things are important. And Wall and Harris has been here for 5 days, and she makes the intentional decision to go to Penzi's Spices,
yes,
which has gone on rants against Republicans, like vile ones. He's also hinted at anti-Semitism, not really hinted, but it's pretty blatant. And, you know, they made that choice anyways. Their advanced team knows how to use Google. They know when you go to Pittsburgh Strip District, you go to Pennsylvania Macaroni. You don't go to Penzi's. Penzi's is opened by some dude in Wisconsin. You go to Penn Mac. Penn Mac has been in the Pittsburgh Strip District since 1901. It's in its sixth generation. They know that. They understand that. That was intentional.
Yeah.
And then for her to go there and talk about, we have to end divisiveness. Oh, my goodness. Are you kidding me? You're saying that in that store?
Well, so that's interesting from this perspective, because, you know, I've said this many times, that when it came to John Fetterman and what he eventually was kind of exposed to be here in the last 8 months, which is not a radical and someone who uses common sense, that I wonder if, you know, the people of Pennsylvania knew Oz was an outsider. They knew, you know, Fetterman. We didn't know him from the outside. So sometimes I always wonder if these voters are going to make decisions, you know, based on what their interests are. And maybe it's the opposite of Fetterman, where they see this Democrat ticket and say, this is not relatable to our lifestyle, right?
That's exactly right. That is exactly right. And I think that Bob Casey is more than likely in trouble in my state.
And that's big, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, because now it's, I don't know what your vision is here, but the Senate is looking more and more likely Republican at this point.
Oh, I mean, Montana is gone.
Yeah, I think
West Virginia is gone. Likely Maryland is gone. There it is right there.
Yeah. Well, and then there it is. What I talk about is it there it is with Harris in the White House and control of Congress and both houses by Republicans? Or is it Trump in the White House and a Senate that's Republican and the House flips back? I mean, there's a lot of different possibilities here.
I would pay attention to Alaska. That's a big, big, big congressional race. And it was two Republicans against the Democrat. The Democrat was going to win. Now it's a Republican against the Democrat in a plus 12 state. I'm going to put my money on the Republican.
Wow. Yeah, that's an interesting little race to watch as well. All right. So where are your expectations right now for this debate tomorrow night? She's barely said a word since becoming the nominee. She did the sit down interview with Dana, didn't really provide anything. I think they have to be nervous about how she might perform, simply because if you're not nervous, why don't you get her out there more?
Yeah, I don't know. I have no expectation. I mean, I just don't know. And this is a year where we don't know what's going to happen next.
I agree. I would agree. It's hard to tell at this point. I mean, this whole race could shift in a completely different direction tomorrow night.
Well, it has been. I have been writing this for several weeks. There was never that bounce that you were told it happened. Never. I've been all over my state. I've also been in Michigan and Wisconsin. That bounce happened in that convention hall, and that's it. There is no Trump voter who left Biden and is now coming back to Harris.
No, there is not. And I would agree with you on that for sure. But obviously, look, I looked at the polls in Pennsylvania right now. Do you believe it's a 50-50, you know, shot right now? And if you think, my sense is Wisconsin's going to be tough for Trump. But that depends on African-American turnout. How do you see Wisconsin and Michigan right now?
I see Michigan for Trump. I'm unsure about Wisconsin.
Okay, there you go.
That's a jump ball there.
And you think Pennsylvania is really trending toward Trump at this point?
At this moment, absolutely. Yeah.
Interesting. All right. Well, enjoy the debate tomorrow night. We'll see what happens. And have you been on the stage near President Trump at any time? Have you spoken with him recently, I guess, is the question, really?
Yeah, I've interviewed him two times since the shooting. If your listeners don't know, I was 4 feet away from the president when he was shot. I was in the buffer. I was set to fly from Butler to Bedminster with him to do an interview. That's why I was so close. I talked to him the next day and interviewed him. I've interviewed him again in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and Johnstown, Pennsylvania.
Do you see, you know, because what I talk about a lot is the difference between teleprompter Trump and off-the-cuff Trump. And when teleprompter Trump is delivering some speeches, he doesn't seem very engaged these days. Now, when he goes off the cuff and he starts, you know, engaging, then it's a different person. But is that kind of on display for voters, or is that just me watching the media coverage?
That's you watching the media coverage.
Okay, well, that's
fair. Watching the media coverage.
I should do that all the time.
My
that should be a rule.
My profession has been very disappointing to me.
Well, it's been disappointing to me overall, and I certainly get that. And I don't think we have a lot of good coverage right now based on what's happening, which is why we depend on you, Selena Zito. You can find her work at selenazito.com. You have a great week. Enjoy the debate tomorrow night.
Thanks for having me. You do as well.
That is Selena Zito, who, you know, has amazing access to the president right now because of all of her reporting. And that's fascinating. Look, she's feeling she gave you advice. She gave me advice. Ignore what the legacy media is doing. And I do see, and Nate Silver's got this thing handicapped today as dead even right now. So tomorrow night's going to be very interesting. We hope to see you at the debate watch party. We got more coming up. I like this song here. Bleachers. Jack Antonoff. We always publish the bumper music list at the end of the show if you follow on Twitter at Mark Reardon KFTK. Hey, Sue, you know, we talked about this over the summer, I think earlier this year. This may actually go back to last year, the trademark lawsuit over Mission Taco.
Oh, yeah.
So Mission Foods is the tortilla and the chip manufacturer, and they sued Mission Taco for trademark infringement over the word mission after learning, I guess, here's what happens. You had a 2023 Tortilla Industry Association meeting in Austin, Texas. I bet that thing's a blast, right? A bunch of tortilla guys down there and ladies. I bet they get nuts. But anyway, they didn't even know about Mission Taco, and then they kind of found out about it. They claimed that the word was inherently distinctive and that after 6 years in business had come to signify Mission Foods products. So Mission Taco, they came to an agreement. Do you remember this?
No. I mean, I know they did, but I don't remember what it was.
Well, what I remember, because now it's changed and it's being described as something different, I remember they were just going to not market products so it wouldn't be confusing with any kind of Mission, you know, tortillas that you would buy at Schnucks or Deerbrugs or anything like that. But essentially, now what happened is, I guess this was part of the original agreement here, and I think how they settled. Adam Tilford, who's one of the owners, said that they're changing it now. Not sure about this, Sue. It's just one of those things that's going to be new. Session Taco. Yeah, see? You responded the same way I did.
Mean,
I could
tell.
You just
take a pause and you're like, wait, what?
Well, because
it's not terrible.
It's not terrible, but it's also because we're used to Mission Taco. I just loved it. And I love the place. And by the way, here's the other problem right now. I'm looking at this story on the STL Today website.
That looks good.
And there's
that
food
looks
up
real
there. And now
good.
I'm starving and I want some of this. but I guess this is all part of the arrangement. They said today that they're going to become Session Taco in coming months. They have made the decision to turn the unfortunate news into an opportunity to refresh their menu and recommit to service and a family friendly yet fun experience for their guests. I just think it's unfortunately because in this particular situation, what really was going to happen? Do you think people are going into Mission Taco? I know the lawyers have to do what they have to do. The company has to protect its name. I get all that. But why couldn't you have? Because originally what it seemed like is that they went into court and they kind of came out with a compromise that said, okay, you guys are cool if you're not going to try to sell Mission Taco stuff online or in stores, et cetera. But I guess it just became too much for the Mission Taco folks.
I guess
or the
so.
Mission, yeah, both sides.
This goes on quite a bit. Yeah, people really get defensive about that. My brother had to change the name of his company because there was a tiny, tiny place on the East Coast that had the same one.
My wife worked for a company here in St. Louis, which is called Switch. And when she started working for them, they were called the Spark Agency. And there was, I think there was another place in Kansas City that was Spark. And then they sued and they, you know, they changed the name to Switch. So this, there is a little history, I guess, here. The name change drops the letters M and I from the word mission. And that was intentional. Cutting the word joint was a move the brothers had always wanted. So Adam Tilford said they're using the opportunity to make the change, and it comes from their roots in Southern California. So this is marketing, so you tell
me. Right, exactly.
He said session can be used to describe fun moments like a skate sesh or a sports sesh. Really? That seems cringe to me to use
totally
a word
cringe
that my daughter would use. I don't know. People can come in and have a taco sesh or a margarita sesh. Keep trying, boys. But look, we love your food. I just think that this is unfortunate because I'd love for the lawyers to get along and say, you know what? That's really not that big of a threat. We're cool with it. But
that's
they can't do that.
I mean, we're so get I after
it's
everybody.
A litigious society. There's no doubt about that. I have a fun, you know, I think I'm going to save this because after four here, I have a pretty good presidential debate quiz for you and Fred and for Ethan that I think you're going to like. I think tomorrow night's going to be interesting. We're going to have our debate watch party at Dave and Buster's. We are sold out. So if you're on the list, we would love to see you there and we will see you there tomorrow night. I think that as we start, and you know, Sue, I've been relatively bullish on the opportunity for Donald Trump to win this election just because she's gotten this big, wet, sloppy kiss from the media the past several weeks. I mean, this has gone on for 8 weeks now. There's been nothing challenged whatsoever.
Right.
And now we're at the point where something might actually happen. this brings me back to June when we were all on the cusp of the first presidential debate with Biden. And I think a lot of us were convinced, you know what, there's not going to be that moment because it just seems like it would be too perfect and too scripted for Biden to have this moment that's going to really cause the collapse of his campaign. Well, it wasn't but 3 or 4 minutes into the debate when we all realized that those moments were happening and they repeated themselves throughout that night. I don't know. I don't think anybody knows. You got expectation games going on right now. Tulsi Gabbard has, played Kamala in some of the debate prep. She debated Kamala, you know, back if you go back to when she was running for president. So Tulsi says she's got some advice for Trump right now.
It really is just sharing the experience that I had with her on that debate stage and the kinds of tactics I think she will try to use to perhaps get under his skin or really to try to deflect away.
You know, I was mentioning the BBC team that was in St. Louis, and they interviewed Jane and I yesterday, and they talked about the debate, and the host was asking me, John was asking me about, you know, what I thought was on the line for Trump, and I pivoted right away to Harris, and he didn't want to let me get away with that. He goes, no, well, what does Trump have to do? I'm like, and my point was, I said, look, I don't think it's about Trump at this point. I think everybody knows what Trump's about, and, you know, it is what it is, and for those of us who have always thought maybe if he just bites his lip, it's not going to happen. But I think the question for the country is right now is, what is she about? Good portion of the country has no idea. They really don't, and she hasn't been pressed. So I think there's a lot on the line tomorrow night, especially because people are starting to vote right now. Fox News coming up, then Sue's News on 97.1 FM Talk. Our friend Ian Scheer will talk about the Apple event today and a whole lot more.
Get more at 97.1talk.com.
Watch party. We got more coming up. Nice. I like this song here, Bleachers. Jack Antonoff. We always publish the bumper music list at the end of the show if you follow on Twitter at Mark Reardon KFTK. Hey, Sue, you know, we talked about this over the summer, I think earlier this year. This may actually go back to last year, the trademark lawsuit over Mission Taco.
Oh, yeah.
So Mission Foods is the tortilla and the chip manufacturer, and they sued Mission Taco for trademark infringement over the word mission. After learning, I guess here's what happens. You had a 2023 Tortilla Industry Association meeting in Austin, Texas. I bet that thing's a blast, right? A bunch of tortilla guys down there and ladies. I bet they get nuts. But anyway, they didn't even know about Mission Taco, and then they kind of found out about it. They claimed that the word was inherently distinctive and that after 6 years in business had come to signify Mission Foods products. So Mission Taco, they came to an agreement. Do you remember this?
No. I mean, I know they did, but I don't remember what it was.
Well, what I remember, because now it's changed and it's being described as something different, I remember they were just going to not market products so it wouldn't be confusing with any kind of Mission, you know, tortillas that you would buy at Schnucks or Deerbrugs or anything like that. But essentially, now what happened is, I guess this was part of the original agreement here, and I think how they settled. Adam Tilford, who's one of the owners, said that they're changing it now. Not sure about this, Sue. It's just one of those things that's going to be new. Session Taco. Yeah, see? You responded the same way I did.
I mean,
I could tell.
Just take a pause, and you're like, wait, what?
Well, because
it's not terrible.
It's not terrible, but it's also because we're used to Mission Taco. I just loved it, and I love the place. And by the way, here's the other problem right now. I'm looking at this story on the STL Today website,
that looks good.
And there's
that
food
looks
up
real
there, and now
good.
I'm starving, and I want some of this. but I guess this is all part of the arrangement. They said today that they're going to become Session Taco in coming months. They have made the decision to turn the unfortunate news into an opportunity to refresh their menu and recommit to service at a family-friendly yet fun experience for their guests. I just think it's unfortunately because in this particular situation, what really was going to happen? Do you think people are going into Mission Taco? I know the lawyers have to do what they have to do. The company has to protect its name. I get all that. But why couldn't you have? Because originally what it seemed like is that they went into court and they kind of came out with a compromise that said, okay, you guys are cool if you're not going to try to sell Mission Taco stuff online or in stores, et cetera. But I guess it just became too much for the Mission Taco folks.
I guess
so. Or the
so.
Mission, both sides.
This goes on quite a bit. People really get defensive about that. My brother had to change the name of his company because there was a tiny, tiny place on the East Coast that had the same one.
My wife worked for a company here in St. Louis, which is called Switch. And when she started working for them, they were called the Spark Agency. And there was another place in Kansas City that was Spark. And then they sued and they changed the name to Switch. So this, there is a little history, I guess, here. The name change drops the letters M and I from the word mission. And that was intentional. Cutting the word joint was a move the brothers had always wanted. So Adam Tilford said they're using the opportunity to make the change. And it comes from their roots in Southern California. So this is marketing. So you tell me.
Right, exactly.
He said session can be used to describe fun moments like a skate sesh or a sports sesh. Really? That seems cringe to me to use a
totally
word
cringe
that my daughter would use. I don't know. People can come in and have a taco sesh or a margarita sesh. Keep trying, boys. But look, we love your food. I just think that this is unfortunate because I'd love for the lawyers to get along and say, you know what? That's really not that big of a threat. We're cool with it. But
that's
they
just it.
That.
I mean, we're so get I after
it's
everybody.
A litigious society. There's no doubt about that. I have a fun, you know, I think I'm going to save this because after four here, I have a pretty good presidential debate quiz for you and Fred and for Ethan that I think you're going to like. I think tomorrow night's going to be interesting. We're going to have our debate watch party at Dave & Buster's. We are sold out. So if you're on the list, we would love to see you there and we will see you there tomorrow night. I think that as we start, and you know, Sue, I've been relatively bullish on the opportunity for Donald Trump to win this election just because she's gotten this big, wet, sloppy kiss from the media the past several weeks. I mean, this has gone on for 8 weeks now. There's been nothing challenged whatsoever.
Right.
And now we're at the point where something might actually happen. This brings me back to June when we were all on the cusp of the first presidential debate with Biden. And I think a lot of us were convinced, you know what, there's not going to be that moment because it just seems like it would be too perfect and too scripted for Biden to have this moment that's going to really cause the collapse of his campaign. Well, it wasn't but 3 or 4 minutes into the debate when we all realized that those moments were happening and they repeated themselves throughout that night. I don't know. I don't think anybody knows. You got expectation games going on right now. Tulsi Gabbard has, played Kamala in some of the debate prep. She debated Kamala, you know, back if you go back to when she was running for president. So Tulsi says she's got some advice for Trump right now.
It really is just sharing the experience that I had with her on that debate stage and the kinds of tactics I think she will try to use to perhaps get under his skin or really to try to deflect away.
You know, I was mentioning the BBC team that was in St. Louis, and they interviewed Jane and I yesterday, and they talked about the debate, and the host was asking me, John was asking me about, you know, what I thought was on the line for Trump, and I pivoted right away to Harris, and he didn't want to let me get away with that. He goes, no, well, what does Trump have to do? I'm like, and my point was, I said, look, I don't think it's about Trump at this point. I think everybody knows what Trump's about, and, you know, it is what it is, and for those of us who have always thought maybe if he just bites his lip, it's not going to happen. But I think the question for the country is right now is what is she about? Good portion of the country has no idea. They really don't, and she hasn't been pressed. So I think there's a lot on the line tomorrow night, especially because people are starting to vote right now. Fox News coming up, then Sue's News on 97.1 FM Talk. Our friend Ian Scher will talk about the Apple event today and a whole lot more.
Get more at 97.1talk.com.
Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.